It's time for the big interview.
What is going on here? I demand an explanation.
The big names, the big news, the biggest stories, the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
It's the big stuff. You talking to me?
Who do you think you are?
We have a big show for you tonight.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, top experts, the brightest minds.
I don't know how to put this, but kind of a big deal.
And plenty of time to swim in their brain fluid.
Oh, my.
So listen and learn and enjoy the big interview.
The eyes of the nation are on us right now.
Whatever. Fun will now commence.
You know, no matter how you slice up that introduction, man, the fun's going to commence. Absolutely. Swimming in the brain fluid of somebody who's really smart never gets better than it's going to be. Not only today, but today and tomorrow. My guest truly is somebody who I don't think needs an introduction. He is Jack Bogle, sometimes known by people as Saint Jack. That means he is actually the founder of the Vanguard Group. And beyond that, well, he's one of the most important forces in the investing world for a lot of reasons. Now, today, when he's doing other things, it's not just founder of the Vanguard Group. He's president of the Bogle Financial Markets Research Center. And he is an absolutely prolific writer and blogger. It's johncbogle.com/WordPress. You can find out about his books, his speeches, and everything else. But I am thrilled to say, Jack Bogle, welcome back to Money Life.
Chuck, it's always great to be with you.
Now, I got to start at a place that will sort of catch everybody else up to speed, because you and I have talked countless times over the years. So there's a lot of institutional history here. But I got to set this up in a way that will maybe give people an interesting insight into you and your take on the markets. You have always said that you basically like a simple age-based portfolio. Your age, that's your percentage of your portfolio in bonds. You can wiggle a little bit, etc., but keep it simple. Bond index fund, total stock market index fund, and away you go. Well, Jack, you've been sitting with the bulk of your portfolio in bonds at a time when bonds have been doing better than you expected them to do. You've been missing out on this great run with that big chunk of your portfolio on the stock side. And now you're at a spot where interest rates are going to rise. People are worried. You've talked about what would happen when, you know, the bond market bubble might burst, if you wanted to call it that. How do you sit still right now? Anything changing in your portfolio? And what do you tell folks out there when they're looking at these times and thinking maybe they want to make a change?
Okay, well, first let me see if I can correct you, if I may, Chuck, on the age-based formula. Your bond position should equal your age. First, it's nothing but a very crude rule of thumb as a place to begin. It is not a rule for everybody. It's just a way to think about what you do when you start to rely on investment income as a retiree as compared to earning your income. So not very complicated. Number two, since probably almost everybody who is a decent-sized investor, even a small investor, who is investing on their own, also has Social Security or maybe a pension that's a good pension, not one of the ones that's going to fail. And Social Security is not going to fail. So they've got a piece of capital there worth about $350,000, which is a great, great pool of capital because you get regular cost of living increases. You can't duplicate it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to take into account all of your assets in this age-based formula. Now, that said, obviously, we've gone through a period somewhat changed today where interest rates, instead of being 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12% even for a little while back in the early 80s, and they're now 10-year treasury got down to about 1.4, 1.5%, and 10-year corporates were probably 2.2 or 3%, don't know exactly, and those are very low rates. And I think you're right that they've got to go up sooner or later. We don't know when sooner or later is, but we've already had a big move upward. In other words, some of the damage has been repaired, and in terms of low interest rates, that 10-year treasury has gone from 1.5% to, they've got up to about 2.9, almost 3%. So the short-term yield on a very high-quality instrument is doubled. And so every day changes kind of the way you look at things. But I don't change my investment program because I'm not smart enough to, A, get out of A, B, or C, bonds or stocks, or get back in. And the reason I've been so conservative And I'm not sure I fully explained this to anybody, but I basically have two portfolios. One is my personal portfolio, what I think I might need during the remainder of my life, and that is indeed very conservative, probably 75-80% in bonds. But to avoid the problems of obviously interest rates are rising, I limited my bond position to basically Vanguard Municipal Bond Funds, because it's my personal portfolio, and municipals are very attractive, to our limited-term portfolio, maturities of a couple of years, I guess, and our intermediate term, no long. And so that portfolio is down 1% this year. I don't know how many people have a bond portfolio that's down 1%. They might not even think I'm telling the truth, but just check the record here. So I'm not bothered by that. I want it to be conservative. I want it to preserve, protect, and defend what I have here. Then the other things, I've done a little for my family, for a foundation, for my grandchildren, and they're all about 60% bonds and 40% stock. And I don't change that. I don't rebalance. I just let it go, and it will go up and go down. And believe me, you put it away regularly for these accounts, and it's amazing how well it's done over 25 or 30 years.
For investors looking at things, a couple of years ago, you did a series of interviews with Morningstar where you were really, it was about 2010, and you were looking forward as to what was going to be happening. And you were telling folks, expect about 7-7.5% out of stocks, 4-4.5% out of bonds. Obviously, in the intervening years, we've gotten bigger pickup than that on stocks. What are you telling folks to expect now?
Well, I wouldn't tell them to do anything very differently, to be honest, Chuck. I have a systematic way of looking at this. And, the reason I get to 4% or did then on bonds is because that was basically the bond market yield. The bond market yield is probably closer to it's a mix very heavily in treasuries, which I should say more than parenthetically concerns me. The total bond market is 70% treasuries. I think very few investors should have that much in treasuries. 20 or 30% ought to be fine. So that's a bit of a problem. But right now, let's use 3% as a bond yield, which means over a decade, and you should be looking at things in decade long spans. There's no point in looking at days and weeks and months. So we look at a decade. And if you compound 3% over a decade, it's probably a gain of about 38%, something like that. And you look at stocks, and I'll come back to where the 7% comes from in a sec, but that would double stocks in a decade. 7% will double roughly in a decade. So stocks are clearly the higher yielding, should be, might be, will probably be, will reasonably be expected to be significantly better than bonds. You should face that. And the reason that I like a bond position is nothing is guaranteed. And also, the bond position is like an anchor to windward, we sometimes say, or a little dry powder. So when the stock market falls apart, as it will from time to time, you don't get scared and do something dumb. And I get scared, but I don't do anything dumb. That's what I've learned in my career.
Do you think, Jack?
The 7% comes from around a 2% dividend yield, low, but twice what it was in 2000, and maybe a 5% earnings growth if we're lucky, and that's the 7, because I think stocks are in a general range of reasonable value. Reasonable value, we're talking about price earnings multiples, and depending on exactly what you're looking at, they're much higher than Wall Street gives you. They have their own way of working the numbers, and they're going to tell you 15 times, and I'm more like 20 times, but I don't see that a dramatic change is going to have too much effect on that 7% long-term return, either increasing it or reducing it.
Do you think that the market getting back to where it's at record highs sort of, again, proves out that strategy? Every time, we've been through the times when, okay, you get to the financial crisis of 2008, things are going horribly, and people wanted to back away from the stuff that you've always said is tried and true. Is there some measure of the market constantly reproving the point when we get to record highs and telling folks that, okay, if we back off a little bit from here, you're still looking at a decade or the next more than a decade and you'll be satisfied with the growth?
That's what I'm saying, but I'm also going to add something to that, and that is, I don't know exactly what to say about a record high. Yes, it is at a record high. There's no question about that. But dividends are at a record high, dividends in the Standard & Poor's 500 index and most mutual fund dividends, and corporate earnings are at a record high. So it's the interrelationship between the fundamental value and that ephemeral market price that's the important thing to think about. And so it doesn't really concern me. Record highs, I don't think about that. And these funny milestones for the Dow, which just went over 14,000 or 15,000 or 16,000, and probably one of these days, I hope you're sitting down for this news, Chuck, the Dow will probably go over 20,000. And it might even go to 36,000 if we wait long enough. The title of Jim Glassman's somewhat premature book.
Yeah, somewhat premature. But it may get there, and indeed at some point it will get there, and that's kind of inevitable. And isn't that also part of the point, that the market is someday going to get well beyond 36,000 because my kids and their generation needs it to be in the 50,000s? And no, by the way, that's what normal markets going forward would tell you is going to happen.
Well,
inevitable?
You know, what we have to do, Chuck, is it's interesting the way you've went to do this projection. First, the Dow or the S&P level has nothing to do with the total return on the Dow because it doesn't include income. It doesn't include dividend income. It's just the price. And the price is influenced mostly by the growth of earnings. And if we were to get, let's say, 5% earnings growth, you can get out your little table and figure out where the Dow would be if they can continue to have 5% earnings growth. Although I personally would also look at 4% earnings growth and 3% earnings growth as well to be a little more conservative. You want to underplan, underproject when you're talking about your financial future, I think, because it'll make you save a little bit more, and that's not going to hurt you. If you make it very low and have to save a lot more, well, so what? The saving today won't hurt you too much, for a lot of us anyway, and you'll have so much when you retire, you'll be a really happy camper, as it were. So just use the earnings growth and see where it's going to be. And I can't tell you that, you know, at a moment's notice, but that's what we're looking at as to where the Dow is going to be. And it's just the magic of compounding returns that's taking place over here. Now, I don't want to leave this subject, however, of saying we live in a world of incredible uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
I think the riskiest kind of world that we've lived in my lifetime, which is merely 84 years. Although I don't remember the early years too well. That was the Great Depression period.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is guaranteed. And, you know, if a meteor strikes the Earth, to give you a fairly extreme circumstance, neither bonds nor stocks will be of much help to you. So we're talking about kind of business vaguely as usual, without a nuclear war, without a massive religious war, without some disease that doesn't respect national boundaries. There are a lot of risks out there, and nothing is certain. So the uncertainty is great. So you're left, Chuck, your listeners are left, and you and I are left, with what do? I have two choices, invest in the face of that uncertainty or not invest. Well, for me, it's invest. I don't think those, you know, the apocalypse rarely happens. That may happen. So you should always be aware that there are big risks, but you should never, never, never use that as an excuse to say, well, I'm just going to stop saving and I'll take my chances and live off my kids if I have any when I retire. Not a good strategy.
Absolutely not a good strategy. Jack, I want to talk to you some more about other good strategies. We're out of time for this interview. So, of course, we're going to have you back on tomorrow's show. We're going to take that interview in just a moment. But right now, we've got to take just a quick break. It is the September, the 24th edition of Money Life. Stay tuned. There is much more coming up next. We're talking rates with Greg McBride. And remember, Jack Bogle, johncbogle.com/WordPress. He's going to be back on the show tomorrow. This is Money Life.